We're doing a series. We started 3 weeks ago, the first week of August. Risen is the name of our series that we're doing. We're going to continue that tonight. And I want to read in John chapter 11, verse 25, just this phrase. Jesus said to her, "I am the resurrection and the life. I am the resurrection and the life." That sums it up. That sums it up. And we have four Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Different writers of each Gospel, they tell the same story. Some include some things that others omit. Some share some things a little bit different than the other one shared it. He shared it from their perspective. But each one of them had a different audience that they were targeting. And, a lot of times we don't know that. We just think, okay, why do we need four? They all told the same story. It's all about Jesus. Is there significance to that? Yes, there is. It was told to four different groups of people. Matthew was addressed to the Jewish nation, or the religious nation, a religious people. And he focused on Jesus' credentials, who he was. He quoted a lot of Old Testament scriptures, and he used the term that it might be fulfilled, which was written by Isaiah the prophet. And he would quote a scripture, and he would tie it and show how it was fulfilled in Jesus. So Matthew targeted the Jewish nation. Mark addressed the Romans. At that time, Israel was under Roman control. In fact, Jerusalem was under Roman control at that time. And they were a very practical, pragmatic people. And so he concentrated on Jesus' actions, the thing that Jesus did. In fact, Mark uses a lot of military terms in his gospel. Then Luke addressed the Greeks. Now, the Greeks were very... they were thinkers, and they were very analytical, and you had to prove things to them. And so Luke is such a great gospel. I mean, it's probably one of the greatest gospels that we have. It's probably one of the most thorough gospels. In fact, Luke did a lot of research about the things that he wrote about and the places that he wrote about. See, not only did Luke write Luke wrote Acts, and some people don't know that. Luke wrote Acts, and a lot of the places that they went to, he described certain things in detail. So his target audience was the Greek of that day. John addressed everyone. Now, Luke concentrated on Jesus' teaching. John addressed everyone, especially the believers, the Christians, and he showed us about Jesus' divinity. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. So he concentrates on that. So each of these writers gives us a reason why the resurrection matters. Now, I know that we're celebrating the crucifixion tonight, but we're going to talk about the resurrection. Without the resurrection, the crucifixion wouldn't mean that much. We have to have a resurrection. If there's no resurrection, we have no Christianity at all. So we're going to talk about what the resurrection means to us. In this series, we've been talking about that the cross is a place of redemption, and that the cross is a place of relationships, and that the cross is a place of responsibility. If Jesus did what he did for us to redeem us, to put us in right relationship with God and right relationship with our fellow man, then we have a responsibility to Jesus, or to God, to respond to him. Now, I've asked this every service that we've done this. How many of you have seen The Passion of the Christ? I'll say it again. If you have not seen that movie, you ought to rent it or buy it and watch it. It will make you appreciate so much what Jesus did for you. In fact, get you some, buy you a box of Kleenex when you get the movie, because you're going to need it, because it is a very, very gory, graphic movie. Now, that's the one that Jim Caviezel plays Jesus in, that Mel Gibson did. So, let's think about this tonight. How can something that happened 2,000 years ago impact our life today, where we are right now? Does that resurrection affect us? And what does it have to do with my life? And can it impact my life? So I want us to look at the four Gospels, and I want us to look at four things, four great comebacks that Christ gives us. And we can say it like this: four great comebacks that Christ gives me. Me. See, we have to experience the gospel individually. Individually. Every one of us have to come to Christ the same way, by faith through grace, by grace through faith. We have to come that way. So there are four great comebacks that are represented in the Gospels. In Matthew, the whole idea here is that I can come back from despair. I can come back from despair. There's a lot of people in our world today who are depressed. There are a lot of people in our world today who are hurting. There's a lot of people in our world today who have had bad things happen to them. Maybe you're sitting here tonight. Maybe you're going through something. Maybe you're going through something that's very, very difficult and very, very hard. And you feel like you're in despair. Well, guess what? Because He is raised from the dead, we can overcome our despair. Amen. Hey, y'all good tonight? Y'all need to come back Sunday and do that some more. We like amens. Matthew kind of paints this picture of people in despair, and he introduces us to some very deeply disturbed, discouraged people. I want to read in Matthew. Joseph took the body, wrapped it in a clean linen cloth, and placed it in his own tomb that he had cut out of the rock. He rolled a big stone in front of the entrance to the tomb and went away. Mary Magdalene and the other Mary were sitting there opposite the tomb. Now, I want you to think about this picture for just a minute. Who is Joseph? He's called Joseph of Arimathea. He was a member of the Sanhedrin. He was one of the Jewish counselors, one of the Jewish leaders of that time. In fact, what most of them didn't know, that secretly he was a believer in Jesus. He was a follower of Jesus. In fact, he defended Jesus several times before the Sanhedrin. And it was he, and you remember Nicodemus? We talked about Nicodemus. Nicodemus that came to Jesus by night, and Jesus says, "You must be born again." In fact, both of these came and helped prepare his body to be buried. So here's Joseph of Arimathea, a very wealthy man, a man who was of great influence, but he believed in Jesus. And one of the things that they believed about the Messiah, that the Messiah was going to break the yoke of the oppressors. And at that time, it was the Roman government. So they kind of expected that what Jesus was going to do, he was going to do a great takeover. He was going to take the government over, and then he was going to set up his kingdom. So it would be a political overthrow. We got a lot of folks today think that a president is our answer. Listen, a new president is not our answer. Jesus is still our answer. But we do need to vote as Christians. I didn't get as many amens then. And if you need to know how to vote, come see me. I'll tell you. No, I'm kidding. But Joseph was in despair. He saw his hopes and his dreams die right before his eyes. Have you ever had a dream in your heart? Have you ever had something, maybe it was a relationship, maybe it was a marriage, maybe it was a job that was the dream job, and all of a sudden you saw it crumble right before your eyes. The very thing that you were hoping in, the very thing that you were dreaming about, you saw it just crumble right before your eyes. That's what Joseph saw when Jesus died on the cross. I can just imagine how he felt as he took the body of Jesus. And they wrapped it. In the sheet, and they put the spices for the embalming on him, and they placed him in the tomb. It was the last thing that he could ever do for Jesus, because Jesus, who was their hope, was dead and gone. There was Mary Magdalene, who was the lady of the streets, and she had great hope in Jesus also. How that he had loved her despite who she was, and had encouraged her and had forgiven her and had delivered her. And yet all of a sudden she saw the source of her hope gone, as well as did the other Mary. See, we're a people of despair many times because we have very many disappointing things happening in our lives. But there's good news. See, the story does not end on Friday, because Sunday's coming. Sunday's coming. Sunday came. Let me read in Matthew 28. At dawn, on the first day of the week. What's the first day of the week? Sunday. Mary Magdalene, there she is, and the other Mary went to look at the tomb. There was a violent earthquake, for an angel of the Lord came down from heaven, going to the tomb, rolled back the stone, and sat on it. The angel said to the women, "Do not be afraid, for I know that you are looking for Jesus who was crucified. He is not here. He has risen, just as he said." Guess what? Despair was gone. Hopelessness was gone. Why? Because he has been risen from the dead. See, he can raise us out of our despair. He can raise us out of our hurt. We need to take our hurt to him. We need to believe in him. When it's hard to believe anything, we need to put our trust in him. Why? Because he has conquered death. He has conquered our circumstances and our situations. Listen, he will bring us through. I said he will bring us through. You keep shouting like that, I'm going to preach a little bit. See, here's the message that replaces despair with hope. He is not here. He has risen, just as he said. Those three words, he has risen. You know, that's why there will be over a billion people in churches this Sunday worshiping him. Why? Because he is risen. Isn't that good? Woo! You know, sometimes we just need to read the Bible with new eyes. Now, you should be reading the Bible, okay? I know a lot of Christians don't read the Bible. But we should, and if that's the case, start reading it, because you'll see it with new eyes. But those of us who read the Bible regularly, we need to look at it with new eyes. It is a message of faith. It's a message of hope. It's a message of grace. Thank God for that. Now, the book of Mark, here's the second thing that we can come back from. Not only can we come back from despair, we can come back from defeat. Defeat. See, defeat is not the end. It looked like they were defeated. It looked like they were defeated. See, we see Peter in this book. We see Peter. You remember Peter? You know, Jesus says you're going to be scattered and you're going to run away. And Peter says, Lord, they may run away, but not me. I'm your man. I'll never leave you. I won't forsake you. Though everybody else forsakes you, I won't forsake you. Jesus looked at him and says, before the cock crows, you'll deny me three times. And you know what he did? He denied him three times. And the third time that he denied him, the rooster crowed. And Peter went out and wept. Why? Because he had failed. He had failed. He had been defeated. Have you ever failed before? Have you ever messed up your life before? Have you ever been in a dilemma that you had good intentions and you were going to do the right thing, but you did the wrong thing? You failed. Look at your neighbor and say, you failed. Look back at him and says, well, so did you. We're all in that boat. We've all failed. The Bible says that we've all sinned and come short of the glory of God. There's none that does good. No, not one. Not one means you. Not one means moi, me. We have failed. We've been defeated by our sin. Peter, I'm glad that I didn't live in that time, and I'm glad that I was not one of his disciples, because you get put in the book and everybody gets to read about you. And everybody gets to see your, Peter was always opening his mouth and sticking his foot in his mouth. He said something to Jesus one time and Jesus said, get thee behind me, Satan. Satan, he called him the devil. I'm glad I'm not in the Bible. I might have been called worse than the devil. Aren't you glad that your life is not an open book for everybody to see? Whoa. Yeah, Peter was defeated. He was defeated. He failed. He fell hard. In fact, he cussed. Here's this great and mighty Peter, and this little girl at a fire said, you're one of his. And he cussed and says, I do not know him. And the rooster crowed. He got defeated by a little girl. Now that's demoralizing. That's demoralizing. But you know what? After Jesus was raised from the dead, Peter thought, the Lord could never love me. Have you ever felt that way? The Lord could never love me. I've messed my life up so much. I've done so many bad things. I've turned my back on God so many times. I've made God promises that I would do this, and I did just the opposite. I have failed. God couldn't love me. After Jesus was raised from the dead, listen to this. In Mark 16, he says, but go, tell his disciples and, who's that? Peter. He is going ahead of you into Galilee. There you will see him just as he told you. Now, why did he pick out Peter? Did he know that Peter had failed? Yes, one of the times that he denied him, he looked and Jesus was looking right at him. Now, wouldn't that be bad? I don't know him, and he turns around and looks at you. I don't think it was a condemning look. I think it was a look that pierced him right to his heart, that he knew that the one who loved him, that he had hurt and disappointed so deeply. Hey, we've been in that boat, haven't we? There have been times that I have been so ashamed of myself. Has anybody ever felt that way? Some of you are lying like dogs. We've all done that. Can we just get real? Now, I know the celebrate recovery folks get real every Friday night. Sometimes we church folks, we don't get too real. We need to get real. He says, you go tell my disciples and Peter. He specifically said Peter. Why? Because he wanted Peter to know that he still loved him. And that his defeat was not final. In fact, he drew him aside and he says, and I can just imagine this. I mean, he denied him three times. Jesus draws Peter aside and says, Peter, do you love me? Yes, Lord, I love you. Peter, do you love me? Yes, Lord, I love you. Peter, do you love me? Three times. How many times did he deny him? Three times. How many times did he ask him? Three times. Lord, you know everything. And he says, feed my sheep. Take care of my people. See, he didn't give up on him. He didn't give up on the purpose that Peter was raised up for. And listen, just because you failed, just because you've messed up, just because you've been defeated, doesn't mean that God has given up on his purpose for your life. Because because he lives, you can live also. Because he defeated death, you can defeat whatever it is in your life that has caused you to fail. Glory. So we can overcome despair. We can overcome defeat. Luke says that we can overcome doubt. Oh, here's a big one. Have you ever doubted? Have you ever doubted your faith? Can we be honest tonight? Sometimes, you know, you look at evidence out there. You see things happening out there. You see things in this world that are not right. And you think to yourself, if there was a God, wouldn't he do something about that? There's so much evidence out there that seems contradictory to God. And why don't God just show up and do something? And we find ourselves doubting. I think that's normal. Have you ever thought, what if God doesn't exist? What if there is no heaven? What if there is no hell? What if there is no life after death? I think we've all wondered that, thought that, and we don't want to admit it because that just makes us not look very spiritual, does it? But you know, I think sometimes we've done that. Well, guess what? We're not the only ones. There's people in the Bible who did that. See, the Gospel of Luke was written to the Greeks. The Greeks were philosophers and they were skeptics, and you had to prove everything to them, and you had to have evidence for everything. And there's nothing wrong with evidence. But you know what? There comes a point in our walk of faith. What does faith have to do with things that we cannot see? You could have all the evidence for the proof of God, but still there's going to be that one area where it's going to take a leap of faith. Now, can I just say it takes more faith to be an atheist than it does to be a believer? When you look at the evidence of the existence of God, it is overwhelming. But still we doubt sometimes. And still the Greeks, they did that too. Luke 24, 5 and 6. He said this, "Why do you look for the living among the dead? He is not here. He has risen." Luke also wrote in the book of Acts, it says this in Acts 1:3, "After his suffering, he presented himself to them and gave many convincing proofs that he was alive." Goes on, "While they were still talking about this, Jesus himself stood among them and said, 'Peace be to you.' They were startled and frightened, thinking they saw a ghost. But he said to them, 'Why are you troubled, and why do doubts rise in your mind? Look at my hands and my feet. It is I myself. Touch me and see. A ghost does not have flesh and bones, as you see I have.' When he had said this, he showed them his hands and feet. And while they still did not believe it because of joy and amazement, he asked them, 'Do you have anything to eat?' They gave him a piece of broiled fish, and he took it and ate it in their presence. He said to them, 'This is what I told you while I was still with you. Everything must be fulfilled that is written about me in the law of Moses and the prophets and the Psalms.'" See, he proved to them that he was risen. Remember doubting Thomas? I think sometimes we could put our... I think we could put doubting David, doubting Robert, doubting John. I think sometimes we've all been in that boat where we've doubted certain things. And what did Thomas say? "Unless I see, unless I touch, I won't believe." What did Jesus do? He revealed himself to him. He says, "Thomas, look at me. Touch. Put your fingers in my hands. Thrust your hand in my side. Don't be faithless, but believing." See, listen, I think there's a time in all of our lives that God has made himself real to us. I think that every one of us that know Christ have come to a point in our lives that we have had a God moment where we knew in our hearts that he was real. I think that he reveals himself to us. So listen, we can overcome our doubts. We can overcome our doubts. Finally, here's the last one, the book of John. See, I can overcome my despair. I can overcome my defeat. I can overcome my doubt. But here's the last thing, and this is the best one. I can overcome death. I can overcome death. "It's appointed unto man once to die, and after that, the judgment." We know that we're going to die. But listen, death does not have to have a hold on us. We can overcome death. Three guys are talking about what they want said at their funeral. The first guy says, "I want them to say he was a great guy. He was a good guy." The second guy says, "I want them to say he was a wonderful husband and a great dad." The third guy said, he says, "I want them to say, hey, look, he's moving." We don't want to die, do we? See, we have something in us that wants to live. But you know, death is a horrible reality. One of the sad things that has happened in our church in this last year is we have buried too many people. Too many people. That's the bad thing. The good thing is that that's not the end for them. See, they've already overcome death. See, I'm looking forward to someday. I imagine what heaven's like sometimes, and we don't really know, and I think our imagination falls way short. But I can just imagine when we go that there will be people there that we loved that will be there to greet us. And I think in our imaginations that, you know, there's people that we could name. I have grandpas there. I have grandmas there. I have great-grandparents there. My great-grandfather had a good influence on my life. He was obviously a believer, and he was a passionate believer. He was an old-time shouting Methodist. He'd get happy in the Methodist church, and he'd roll his head back and just, whoo, just laugh. Methodist. He'd go to the Church of Christ revivals, and he'd shout. It didn't matter to him. If he felt it, he let her rip. And you know what? He had such a glow about him that you could see Jesus all over him. I think one of these days that when we get there, it'll be people like that who greet us. People who meant something to us will be there, say, hey, come on in. You're going to love this. They're so fortunate. And I know some of you are hurting for your loved one that's gone on. But listen, they're so fortunate. Because Jesus rose, they've already overcome their death. They'll die no more. It's appointed unto man once to die. The only people who'll die twice is those who don't know Christ. They'll die the physical death, and then they'll die the second death, which is eternal separation from God. But listen, those of us who know Christ will die no more. Camden will not die again. Garrett will not die again. I could on and on and on, the ones that we buried this last year. He'll not die again. Death is over for them. Why? Because Jesus has overcome death, hell, and the grave. And because he did, I can too. John 11:25-26, and we're going to close with this. Jesus said to her, I am the resurrection and the life. The one who believes in me will live, even though they die. And whoever lives by believing me will never die. Here's the question. Do you believe this? Do you believe this? Now here's the question.